I have a built-in AC hum. It's my soul. It's badly rectified, by the way. Most people have a full-wave rectification system. I, lousy, cheap half-wave rectification. I got a great big 120-cycle hum. You hear that hum? You think that's WOR's cheap equipment, don't you? You think it's your rotten, lousy, cheap, built-by-hand, crummy kit FM tuner drifting all over the dial, huh? No, it isn't. Doesn't care for you. That's the sound of my soul humming. Half-wave rectification all the way. All right, George, somewhere along the line, somebody neglected something very deep someplace, and would have been better. You know, wouldn't it be great to be a true believer? There's a guy with a completely, fully rectified soul. It's a great word. I suggest you look it up. Rectified. The word rectification comes from the rectitude, you know, the rector. You know, speaking of sore heads, if you think I'm a sore head, you should have heard Ed Fitzgerald tonight. And I think tonight's program will be a salute to Ed Fitzgerald's spleen. Yes, some people have heart, old Ed has spleen. And can't you just imagine, you know, some guy, you know that old cliche when somebody says, how do you do it, Fred? And he hits his chest, he says, right here, it's heart. They ask Ed how he does it, and he hits himself down here below the belt, just a little to the left, he says, it's here, spleen. Well, Ed's got it, I'll tell you. I listened to Ed today from the World's Fair. And you could hear somebody pounding on the door of the studio that were broadcasting. It says, who is that maniac out there? It goes like that. Ooh, ooh. And Peggy is always trying to make the world sound a lot better than it is. She says, well, Ed, you know, this is actually a storeroom. He says, junk room, where it's a junk room, storeroom, junk room. She says, yes, well, it's a little in disarray, you know. Yeah, that one needs cigar butts, beer cans. Will that maniac quit pounding on there? And he's broadcasting from the World's Fair, you know, the world of tomorrow. And you hear, ooh, bah, bah, bah. Some nut is pounding on the door. He says, where are the cops calling? The maniac out of here. He said, I've had it up to here with his fair. Ooh. And it was a great moment of truth. He said more truth about the fair than Barnes has yet. You're getting some insight into some great men if you've watched this colloquy between Barnes and Moses. Moses won't send them a pass. You know, they finally wind up sending him ten free tickets. He's allowed to come in free on the New Jersey Day, the Salute to West Virginia Day, and the General Motors Uber Alles Day. And, you know, it's no coincidence that this World's Fair, which is operated by Robert Moses, of course, he's the great panjadrome, the great visionary of the superhighway world. The two biggest exhibits are Ford and GM. and I imagine there's some concrete company there has a big exhibit. You know, while on the, old Eddie is here. You should have heard him, Ed. It was great today. Ed says, listen, he said, I don't care what they tell me. I will not use that crummy World's Fair language. He says, what are these refreshment complexes? I never going to call it's a hot dog stand. I call them refreshment complexes. Have you noticed that our language is becoming a new thing? It's all sort of connected with Colonel Glenn and AOK and all that stuff, you know. Everything is far more fantastic in our new language than it really is in true life. And I think that our language has been so completely, influenced by advertising, where everything is different from what it really is, and it's always greater than what it really is. Always greater. Absolutely spectacular. Like, for example, how many times have you watched a commercial or listened to a commercial for cigarettes and they talk about that crisp, clean taste? Is there one guy, raise his hand out there, can tell me, honestly, do you taste cigarettes, any of you? Do you really taste a cigarette, do you? You think about it for a minute. Do you really taste a cigarette? A lot of people, yeah, I do. Yeah? I wonder whether you do or not. It's rare that you get an honest cigarette smoker. He says, well, no, I don't tell you. I just, yeah, I taste. Yeah, I can taste it. That's a mild, clean, crisp taste there. The spring breeze is blowing through my eyeballs. It's a spring taste. Yeah, I always get stuffed up in the spring. Yeah, well, it's just like spring. I always get stopped up in the spring, you know. Hay fever, no. Yeah, it reminds me. Spring taste. Well, I don't know about that. Old Ed says, I will not call them refreshment complexes. They are hot dog stands. And then you could hear Peggy going, ooh, you're making those little clucking sounds. She's trying to calm him down to make it sound better. She, well, you know. Ed says, yeah, 25 cents for a cup of coffee and melted wax. That's right. You know, you lay down, if you go up with a chick and you go up to the, first of all, it takes you 4 hours to get to one of them. Everybody's lined up, you know, outside of them, all the workers, everybody, all standing out there in front of the refreshment complex. You finally get there, and they give you this this paper cup of coffee. And have you ever seen a paper cup with a false bottom? Wow. I mean, it's like a shot glass in a Barbary Coast bar, you know. And you get this little cup of this lukewarm stuff, and it's got, they say, cream milk, or what do you want in it? And you get melted wax. No matter what you ask for, it's melted wax you get in. Very strange stuff. It's got a peculiar scum on the top of it. And Ed says, that's just 25 cents. I've had it up there. And Peggy's going, well, yes, you know, that lovely little exhibit over there. It's, yeah. It was great to hear that. Now, I'm not necessarily, agreeing with or disagreeing with Ed, but I will say it's great to hear honest spleen on the air once in a while. He says, come on. You know, he just doesn't listen. Because hour after hour, I get so tired of radio interviews where everybody loves each other. Have you noticed that the average interview show today consists of the interviewee telling the interviewer what a great program the interviewer has? For that's the first 15 minutes. And then the interviewer then spends the next 15 minutes telling the interviewee what a fantastic, magnificent, incredibly insightful person. And wonderful, wonderful, just unbelievable. You have meant so much to me. And then the wrap-up of the last 10 minutes is in concert, both of them doing a sort of fugue of self and mutual love and admiration. And then finally, the final plug-a-roo for the book as they go off, or the picture, or the play. There's that guy laying down on a spleen. Listen to this guy. Oh, yeah, bum, 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 bum. Will you shut that maniac up? I'm tired of broadcasting from the studio and a maniac. Hey, cut it off. Right out loud. Work your fingers to the bone, and what do you get? Ted Malley blowing it out his ear. Well, we'll be here. We'll be here. Ted's the only guy I know that has double straps on his BVDs. The very safe man. A little more spleen there, Eddie. A little more. Of course, I wonder, we're getting to the age, though, in our time. Of course, refreshment complex. Too bad Needix didn't think of that. They'd say... Oh, yeah. They've got one place out there called Your Vision into the Future Center. Kind of like that one. It's not just show, it's the Vision into the Future Center. This is like that world headquarters for visioning into the future. And, of course, selling you a few convertibles along the way. While we're on the subject of the commercials, though, we might as well. It's no wonder, you see, that our language has gone completely to pot. Refreshment complex. Now, that's a very interesting phrase. Do you know what the word complex means? Well, it doesn't mean a little stand where you put your foot up on the rail and order hot dogs. refreshment complex. And so, but when you begin to use the word in that sense, the word complex, of course, will disappear. Oh, yeah, completely disappear. I'm surprised they didn't call it replenishing complex. That would have been even better. However, that's for the next fair. There'll be something like that, a duplex or triplex. However, I saw one tonight that was a fan. Bring on my lovely, sweet interlude into the commercial world music, please. Lost you too. And so, once again, a little vignette from the commercial world of today. The dream existence of now. You and I, as we go hand in hand along that great roadway of vision. There's this great scene now. You have to have the scene now. There's a quick dolly in to a six-pack of beer. This is the way the scene went. There's a six-pack of beer. I wonder whether you saw this commercial. And the guy, it's all done silently with just a little bit of music behind it. Just a little bit there, just a touch. And you see this hand bringing the beer out. And the camera lovingly plays over that six-pack. And then another hand comes from the opposite side of the picture and removes one of the containers. There's a brief pregnant pause, and then a voice says, "Say, Ed, isn't this a new label?" And Ed says, "Why, yes, George, it is." Bring up the music a little as the camera lovingly plays over that new escutcheon of reality, the label. And then voice number two says, "Say, aren't these?" "Of course they are. These are the new glass cans." The new glass cans. He's got a bottle in his hand. "Yes." The next voice says, "Yes, Charles, they're the new glass cans in the new can size glass can shape." And then the music rises and the announcer comes in and says, "Yes, once again, the Whoopi Beer Company leads with the new glass cans, the new container for beer." A quick dolly in to the new glass can, which looks just exactly like every bottle ever looked. They have never once mentioned the word bottle. Yes, and I suppose 10 years from now, there will be a commercial where they'll show this guy with a can, and it'll say, "Have you tried the new metal bottle?" A new glass can. Well, now, of course, I can already see the fine hand of Libby Owens Ford in that one. It took the American Can Company $87 billion and endless numbers of years to wean the public away from bottles. They called them glass containers. Or tin containers. You remember they called them metal containers? You try the new... Oh, you know, another thing about beer commercials that have always intrigued me. Have you noticed that nobody in any beer commercial ever drinks beer out of a can? And yet everybody I know who drinks beer out of a can? I saw one the other day that was insanely unrealistic. These guys are out in the boat. And the wind is howling and the waves are going, you know, and they're having, you know, those insane parties they're always having when the beer is around, you know, the music, and they're yelling and howling and the beer is flying. And every one of those, I never saw anything like it. These guys got beer cans and they are pouring their cans into steins aboard a boat. Very beautiful, kind of fragile looking, Steuben glass stein. Bring me a little bit more of that wonderful song there. And then there was another, yes, that's lovely, yes, another lovely little commercial. You might have seen it. Bring it up there, Eddie, just a little bit there. This one was the dramatic interlude of a young husband and a young wife at home. The camera plays lovingly over a sparkling kitchen. The camera first picks up a lovely sparkling sink and then moves to a lovely sparkling little bar and then moves to a lovely sparkling little refrigerator and then to the lovely sparkling little bride who is standing next to the sparkling sink wearing a lovely little gingham apron from Bon Vitellier. Her pearly white teeth gleam in the half murky darkness of a badly exposed film. And her husband looks longingly into her lovely eyes. And then, without so much as a how do you do or by your leave, she starts to sing, "Phil's, Phil's Napster keeps my hands so soft and warm and soft and loving. Phil's, Phil's for soft hands." He looks at her for a long moment and he says, "What a lovely song." What a lovely song. And how well you sang it to me, dear. Singing to me of your love, your joy, your passion. We are one. And together we shall go down that primrose lane, hand in hand with our plastic new bouncy bottle of fell. Your hand shall remain lovable and soft and smooth and forever young, forever and ever, and I shall love you forever and ever. Because of your soft, lovable, smooth hands forever and ever. Just keep your claws off of me, though. Then there was this little, lovely little vignette. I don't know whether you saw this one. It's just a wonderful little ad. I'll never forget this one. Right on television there. It was bedtime. Bedtime. Bedtime came along. And we had just experienced one of those nice little soft home vignettes. So beloved of Benton, Benton Bowles, Whoopi Young, and Rubicam. Just a little simple home in a little simple American family, Mommy and Baby got into bed, into the same bed, and then Daddy kissed them both goodnight, turned out the lights, and left for his own trundle bed. It's the new America. It's a new little Oedipus complex in formation. A little Electra is on the way. Just thought you'd like to interpret that one for homework. Oh, yes. Real men use king's men. Ask the woman who owns one. Don't worry, honey. I knew long before you about station breaks. This is WORAM and FM New York. Speaking of double talk, we'll be here until, well, the important stuff comes back on. And speaking of the important things, a little vignette out of real life.
Sir, the airline just called.
Who is the airman?
Your jet leaves at 8:45 tonight.
Man
with the first form.
Thank you.
You arrive in Rome at 10 tomorrow.
The bolder, keener tasting.
I'll be ill, man.
Anything else, sir?
Yeah. Just that's the baby.
There's a little bit of the ale man in all of us. And nothing brings it out like a Ballantine ale. Bolder, keener, more to the point. Ballantine ale. The ale man's ale.
Who is the ale man?
Now, let's see. We have other things to do here. Speaking of strange, sneaky things in the dark, there was a, did you hear, of course, you've heard the one of the Mustang. I don't even tell you about that one. The guy says, my Mustang treats me better than any chick. My Mustang treats me better than a chick. Ya-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Yes, there he goes. Off into the sunset. The sun dipping down over the northern virginal woods. It's George and his new Mustang, forever and ever intertwined, forever and ever going down life's rocky pathway together, their faith and their destiny intertwined. There you go. Somebody told me, he says, have you seen the Peter Pan on the Peter Pan peanut butter jars lately? I have not, but I dread to think. It's a combination of Anthony Perkins, Marlon Brando, with just a little touch of Mary Martin. I think we better start getting serious. we've just been playing around, haven't we, friends? Got to get a little serious here. You know, it isn't often that I pick up on a piece right out. Oh, you know. Oh, wait. Before we go any further, for one thing, I forgot. I must tell you this. My medical friend. There's a doctor who keeps informing me of what is being said in the medical world, particularly in London, from the medical magazine over there, Lancet, which is their version or their counterpart of the medical journal over there. See, Lancet. He says, an anonymous physician, he says, if you don't think that showbiz is not getting in everywhere and unreality is beginning to take over from reality and is far more interesting than reality, listen to this one. He says, from an anonymous physician, issue April 64, 1164, page 824 of Lancet.
I am a Dr. Kildare fan. Because after attending to patients for 7 days and 7 nights, mostly for non-existent diseases, I like to see at least one really ill individual a week and practice good medicine, even though only vicariously. For that reason, I am a Dr. Kildare fan.
Yeah! And so to doctors everywhere who envy Dr. Kildare and Ben Casey for their fantastically interesting practices. They don't have any of those old, dull bunion cases that you have to fight through all day long. Those fistfights and arguments with the guys with the little sore throats. Those ladies with the watery eyes and the watery ideas. No, to you doctors everywhere, we salute you tonight. Were that life like the life in one of hospitals, one of TV's great general hospitals, a hospital occupied by Ben Casey and Dr. Kildare, where Blue Cross arguments never arise, where the nurses never quit on you in the middle of an important operation, taking with them their unsterilized home equipment. Yes, we're... Kildare never spends 45 minutes arguing with his patient about how rotten the food is. Why don't they do something about that oatmeal that comes in every morning? And those people that keep yelling at 5:30 in the morning to wake him up when a guy hasn't slept for a month and a half. Yes, one of television's great general hospitals. Yes, sir. That's my baby. No, sir. Don't mean maybe. Of course, we're all returning in one way or another to childhood. And I have a picture here that is going into my vast file of trivia to let them know let them know that how it was really, Eddie. You remember lawnmowers? You remember lawnmowers you pushed around with a thing that go and even when they came out with power mowers? Well, the newest one now, I think, is even going to appeal more to the man of the house. Yes, there's a new lawnmower coming out that is an exact reproduction of one of those tiny little cars that you used to have when you were a kid, you know, with the little pedals that you pushed. It's a little car that has little phony steering wheels and little phony ignition locks and little phony speedometers and tachometers. And it says, have fun while you mow your lawn. And also, incidentally, return to your ninth year in your Bermuda shorts, sucking on your good humor as you mow the lawn in your friendly little American suburban household. Your kid is out swinging with the Jaguar, age 9, and with a chick, undoubtedly. Well, you'll enjoy your good humor bar. He's got his. You can have yours. That is, you swing a little chick if you're lucky. There are alternatives. Let's see now. We have many things going here. What do you got in there, Eddie? Oh, you keep that up there, Ed. Oh, here's another one I think that ought to give you a little introduction to the brave new world today. More soft, sweet dream music, Eddie, just a little bit now. This is an advertisement from the Glen Cove, Long Island Record Pilot. Oh, the Record Pilot, standing at the wheel, braving the gales, carrying us safely into a safe harbor everywhere. The Record Pilot.
No accepting applications for fall 1964 in our nursery school program. 5-day weekly, 9 a.m. to 12 noon, Monday through Friday. A well-balanced, developmental, certified early childhood curriculum enriched by creative arts activities. Yes, to all of you youngsters out there who are about to enjoy a certified early childhood, we salute you. We, the poor skim milk of existence, the uncertified survivors of childhoods that did not bear the stamp of approval of the Good Housekeeping Seal or a Parents Magazine or Dr. Crinkly Eyes Spock. Who knows what a baby's for? Baby. Yes, our nursery school, Country Day Division, accredited, chartered, registered by the New York State Board of Regents. A certified early childhood curriculum featuring creative block work. And a sand pile that sings. That's very good, Edward. That was beautiful. I kind of like that. Wait till the first knife wielder comes out of that crowd. The first one, you know. Well, of course, have you ever noticed that every time they show a kid that's gone, like a pot smoker or something on TV, they always show him coming from a bad family? Well, let me tell you this. You would never get away with showing a pot-smoking kid, a kid who spends all of his time sharpening his razor in the bathroom. You could never get away with showing this kid coming from a magnificent home that is fathered by a vice president of a nationally known bank. Hey, isn't that Charlie up there swinging on a chandelier? Swing, Charlie! After all, that's our dead party of the year! Woo-hoo! Well, it was just a little party, only $17,000 in damage. There were only 7 busted heads, 18 cases, and I understand they're all getting married. All right, gang. Well, they all come from certified early childhood well-balanced curricula. I love that word, certified. Is your life certified, friend, out there? I'm sure a lot of people think theirs is. That's good. We've got to get right to this thing. We won't have time to do this. It isn't very often that I read in its entirety an article. And I have to read most of this here. It's a funny scene there. Let me see. You think I'm the only one who has noticed the great role reversal? You know, a lot of people think that that I'm inventing this, but it's happening. Everyone's noticing it everywhere. And here's a piece that was condensed from Newsday and published in the Reader's Digest. And by the Reader's Digest's implied permission, I will read part of it here, because it's kind of funny. I don't often read pieces from Eddie. Please, a little mood music here. And the title of this piece is The Future of the 5-Hour Day. Hey, yes, we are moving steadily. This is a private preface to the piece. Into the brave new world, where man will be finally freed from the back-breaking toil and labor that has pursued him since the days of his cave forebears and those who built the great pyramids at Giza. The 5-hour day won recently by a New York Electricians Union could turn out to be a Pyrrhic victory. Other trades in the construction industry have high-voltage ideas about leisure time, too. And the way their union leaders have been getting workers less work and more pay, contracts every year, it may not be long before the men begin to wonder what to do with all of their idle hours. Of course, they won't have much of a problem, since they will all have working wives, undoubtedly, in the future.
Let us consider, for instance, a typical day in the life of Virgil Trauma. Let us visit the home of Virgil Trauma, a plumber, and his wife, Ophelia, a career secretary 8 years in the future. Virgil starts work at 7 a.m, so he has long since departed from the house. By the time his sons, James Hoffa Trauma, 8, and Van Arsdale Trauma, 6, start preparing their jet cereal breakfast, the boys rush off to school after dutifully awakening their mother, Ophelia, and they settle down to coffee. Ophelia settles down to the coffee that Virgil has left for her. By 9:30, Ophelia is picked up by the carpool, and the four gals have all the way to work to discuss what hubby cooked for dinner the night before. And now let us look in as Virgil returns home at 12:30 and stretches out in the easy chair with a copy of the nation's best-selling magazine, Hubby's Home Companion. He gets through such articles as The Office Boy, A Threat to Your Marriage, and Busy Day Meals for Busy Boys, before he's interrupted by a knock on the door. It's Hector Complex, a strapping pipe fitter and next-door neighbor whose union just won him a 4-hour day. He wants to borrow a cupful of sugar to finish an upside-down cake. They make a date to go to the supermarket later in that day, and Virgil then busies himself with cleaning the house. A quick change of time, a sudden shift in scene. About 3 o'clock, Van Arsdale and James H. come bouncing in from school, and Virgil is horrified to see that their shoes are soaking wet. "You just wait till your mother gets home," Virgil barks. At 3:30, Virgil and Hector keep their shopping date. At the store, they stop to say hello to Hal Neurosis. Hal serves on more community committees than anyone else in town. He's a veritable busybody. His current interest is forming a local chapter of the National Equal Rights for Men Association, which is plunking for an 8-hour day for the working man so that he can have equal rights with the working woman. Both Hector and Virgil agree that they'd like to join, and Hector volunteers to hold the first meeting at his house. "I hope the boys like my upside-down cake," he ventures shyly. Back home, Virgil gets busy preparing dinner and is interrupted only 6 times to break up fights between his warring children. The shrimp and cream cheese casserole is in the oven when the phone rings. It is Ophelia. "I won't be home for dinner," she says. "The girls have decided to have a couple of beers and go bowling. We've got to have some relaxation, you know. After all, we do work a full day." Virgil unhappily removes the casserole from the oven. The boys refuse to eat it and rustle themselves up another package of jet cereal. Wearily, Virgil gets them to bed. At midnight, Ophelia hasn't come home yet, so Virgil turns in too. He falls asleep to the wonderful vision of the equal rights for men, boys marching on Washington and winning an 8-hour day from the new lady president. Oh, man. Excuse the expression, old lady. We'll be here. That was written by a guy named Jack Altshul. Very fine. Very funny. And there is more than a modicum of truth. As a matter of fact, you know, I don't know whether you have gone in recently, in the late afternoons, into a supermarket here in Midtown Manhattan. You will find that the men outnumber the women at least 5-1. At least 5-1. This is a fact. And don't think that they're all lonely bachelors, friends. Not a bit of it. Of course, a lot of them, but nevertheless, the facts still remain that there are some interesting things going on in the supermarket there. And you could see it happening. And more guys, just men, it's just something in the air, are doing almost all the cooking at home. It just doesn't make any sense. I just don't have time to cook. Well, you didn't marry a wife, for crying out loud. What do you think you married, a household drudge? What do you think you married? You didn't marry a housewife. And so Jack goes up to the new caloric stove, turns it up to medium high, and pops the casserole in the oven. what is so amazing about it is that the guys seem to dig it, you know? I don't know about that. I mean, men are far more adaptable to life than women. This is going to get a lot of screaming going on, but it is a fact. Men generally, it has been my experience, are wildly adaptable, incredibly adaptable. Anybody who has ever been in the army could tell you just exactly how adaptable to life men really are. Now, it is a truth. You know, I can remember some vignettes, some scenes where guys are squatting down, hunching down on their haunches in the boondocks, Ed, just scrunched down there. And the sun is beating down on the top of their head at 140 degrees. And incredibly enough, about 7 inches from the ground, a gale is blowing. It does not blow above their knees, but the gale is 13 degrees below zero. So the men are scrunched down, they're sort of hunched together, and all of them are eating out of a single cold can of corned beef, poking at it, you know. And one guy says to the other guy, I saw this scene actually happen, one guy says, you know, this beef ain't bad. The wind is whistling past and the sun is beating down and their skin is parched and is covered with blisters. You know, this beef ain't bad. Here, and they pass it to the next guy, prize a little bit. I cannot imagine seven women doing that. I just cannot. As much as you want, I'll never forget one time digging a hole, dug a hole in the ground, see? This hole was about 4 feet deep and about 2 feet wide, Ed, and about 4 feet long. It took about 9 hours of digging with this little toy pick they give you. It's a little toy pick, you know, the kind you get to go to the beach with, little pan, you know. You're chicken away there, you know, picking and popping away, and then little rocks are coming out of 18 pounds a piece, and you're loading them out. You finally get this little place dug, you see, and you get scrunched down in there, and it starts to rain. You're laying there, see, and well, what happens with water? Does it? What does water do, friends? I ask you, what it does? Well, even the most inane student of physics will tell you that water tends to seek its own level, which is to say that holes fill up. Well, I'm laying there, and it's beginning to come up. You know, it's like a ship. You know, I'm lying down there, and it's coming up to my water line. You know, I'm laying there, it's slowly creeping up, and I feel then. A rush. The water has now filled my pockets. I just feel it go in, see? And you don't move, you know, it's just coming down. You've been laying there. You're so tired that every bone in your body is made out of balsa wood. You know, just laying there. And your muscles are hurting, your head is hurting, your ears are hurting, and the water is pouring. It's coming down. Now you build a little trench. Then you get up. You find. You rise out of the water like some ancient sea monster, and the water is streaming out of your ears, you know. And you go down to the end of your hole, Ed. This is what you do, you know. You chip a little deeper hole down at the end so the water goes down. Water goes in there. Then you lay there, see. It's getting deeper and deeper and deeper again. And now suddenly it is up to your eye level. You're just laying there. Next thing you know, it's washing just at the bottom of your eyelid. You know, you feel it trickling into your eyeball. You got to. And by now it is beginning to freeze. It is now down to about 12 degrees. You chip the ice, dig a little more. And then the next morning somebody says to the other guy, this always happens, someone says, you know, how do you, yeah, you're covered with stubble and crud, you know, how you feel? He says, oh, I got a pretty good night's sleep. Yeah. And you go squinking off. And I think man is incredibly adaptable, and I suspect that the men who are now doing all the cooking, and are getting yelled at because they got to do all the cleaning and all that stuff, literally have adapted themselves, and they have become just like man always will. I saw a little vignette, you know, it was a funny little scene. I was at this place, this house, And the girl was cleaning the dishes. She had about four dishes, you see. About four dishes, and he had a couple of little pots and a cup in there. And she says to Hector, she says, Hector, will you please help me dry these dishes? And Hector says, okay. So Hector comes in, he's drying the dishes, and he's, you know, I'm looking around the dishes. And all of a sudden, she says, you don't know how much you're helping me doing this. You just don't have any idea what a drag it is after a meal to realize that I have, of course, there's only two of them, see. What a drag it is after the meal to have to fix all the dishes and do all this stuff. And Hector says, you know, I'll never forget the time I'm on the China Clipper. You know anything about washing dishes on the two guys washing the dishes for over 17,000 guys in four battalions with, and I'll tell you, these dishes come in with cigar butts, eggs, all kind. You don't know where some of the stuff came from. You know, they didn't have it to eat. You know, it just suddenly shows up. And you're clean, the water and screaming and yelling. And he offers, you guys get on a stick in there. Where are you? And the mess sergeant, hey, come on, we need some cups. Come on, I got one of the cups. And the guys are bending over this thing all at a clean $42.50 a month. Well, it's fairly clean, and it's fairly clean. Almost $42.50. That, of course, they take out for laundry, and they take out for the $10,000 insurance policy that some chick is going to collect on. They take out for the dish you broke last week on KP, and they take out for the company fund. Well, it's a pretty clean $29.75, actually, is what it is. Hey, will you guys get out of those cups? Come on, we need more cups. Let's go to the cups. All right, you KPs, huh?